It's even harder to believe you can do great things, the same access to broadband, because you just don't live in the right zip code. That's why the CEDC exists, to help us level the playing field, to make sure that following your heart isn't a false promise if you don't fit in the right demographic profile. And as the first woman to lead this agency, confirmed to do so after 87 years, believe me, I know something about not fitting the demographic profile.
On this FCC Extra, more remarks from Chair Jessica Rosenworcel, as well as the other three commissioners, at last Thursday's meeting of the FCC's Communications Equity and Diversity Council, coming up right now.
FCC Extra! Peachy Bradley!
This is FCC Today, the podcast for Juneteenth Independence Day, June 19, 2023. The Federal Communications Commission has 13 advisory committees. Most of these committees are organized under the Federal Advisory Committee Act. These groups are citizens who have been nominated by the FCC to serve on these committees because of their active roles in the subject matter involved. Their involvement is voluntary, and they receive no compensation from the government for participating. The committees are chartered for two-year periods, which can be extended. Committee members meet both in person and remotely, and also participate in subcommittee activities. Last Thursday, June 15, the FCC's Communications Equity and Diversity Council had their in-person meeting at FCC headquarters in Washington, D.C. The mission of the CEDC is to make recommendations to the FCC on advancing equity in the provision of and access to digital communication services and products for all people without discrimination on the basis of race, color, religion, national origin, sex, or disability. The committee will also make recommendations to the commission on how to accelerate the entry of small businesses, including those owned by women and minorities, into the media, digital news and information, as well as the audio and video programming industries. At the beginning of Thursday's all-day session, all four commissioners made live or pre-recorded remarks before the committee. We will present those remarks. We will start with Commissioner Brendan Carr.
Obviously, thank you so much for the chance to address you all, and obviously thank you for all of the tremendous work that you've put in over this long period of time. I know each and every one of you has a day job that is probably more than a full-time job, and you've taken this on top of that, and so I really appreciate it. I'm grateful for all the work that you've been doing. I'm very much looking forward to the final recommendations that are going to come out of this group. I'm also pleased to see that the chair has initiated the rechartering of this organization for another 2 years. It does remind me of an old saying that, you know, that the prize for winning a pie eating contest is more pie. And maybe for some of you that may be in store, that congrats on getting this done, but you'll probably be unlisted potentially to go another round. But I'm very interested in what you all have to do. There's no question that we have work to do to improve diversity across the communication sector. I think broadcast is one area where I think we've struggled. You know, we have still something in the single digits when it comes to minority ownership of, you know, full power broadcast television. I was supportive of a transaction that would put us out of the single digits into the double digits, but that didn't get full support from the commission. So maybe we'll try again another go round. But look, I do think we need to make sure that, among other things, our processes for mergers and transactions are clear on the front end, because if it's murky, that itself is a it's a barrier to people deciding to consummate transactions. One issue that I sort of supported was this idea of an incubator program in the radio space, where we would give some regulatory relief to radio stations in exchange for incubating smaller entrepreneurial new entrants, and we were really excited about that. Unfortunately, it was stayed for a long time based on a Third Circuit decision, but now it's back in effect. I think we need to sort of look at reinvigorating that incubator so that it succeeds. I've also talked about the idea of taking that incubator program and moving it into the TV space, not just sort of radio space, and that could be sort of another important step forward. But look, we got a unique opportunity right now as a country. We've got something, you know, like $40+ billion at commerce that can be used for broadband infrastructure, digital divide efforts. If you step back from there, I've counted something like $800 billion that could be available for broadband infrastructure. So the interesting thing is, for years we have wanted to close the digital divide, but to some extent lacked the sort of the resources to fully do it. We're sort of in a different spot right now. Like, we now have the funding in a lot of ways to do it if we get the policies right. And that's sort of the challenge, is making sure that we get these policies right so that every single person, regardless of zip code, has access to a high-speed internet connection. And for me, it's sort of a real important everyday thing. I was in the Sharswood neighborhood of Philadelphia a couple years ago. I was at an event at a school there, and I met a young woman named Tommy. And she dropped out of high school when she had her first kid. She grew up in public housing. And she told me the story about how school online, and she ended up being able to ultimately land a job working at the Philly Housing Authority, and she was getting ready to sort of purchase her own house. She had five kids now, and she was at this event just sort of talking about the value of a connection and what it meant to her. So the stuff we do is real, and it's important. And so for that reason, I'm really looking forward to the expertise and the views that you all bring to bear in your recommendations and seeing where we at the FCC can hopefully do more than talk about these issues, but really take concrete action. I look forward to doing it. So thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Next up, we hear from Commissioner Jeffrey Starks.
Excited to be with you for the final meeting of the Communications Equity and Diversity Council under this charter. Chair Gate, Vice Chairs Turner Lee and Allen, thank you for inviting me to speak. The CEDC is a vital part of the Commission's work on diversity and equity, and your efforts over the past 2 years will make a difference. And today's meeting is an important one. I look forward to reviewing the final reports from the working groups that will be presented today. And to everyone who served on the Innovation and Access Working Group, the Diversity and Equity Working Group, and the Digital Empowerment and Inclusion Working Group, I thank you for your service. The recommendations the CEDC adopts will shape the policies we consider in the future, lay the foundation for a more equitable policymaking world. The reports you vote on today carry significant weight. The diverse and inclusive makeup of the CEDC means that we can look upon the reports you all adopt with confidence that all stakeholders have participated. As many of you know, my priorities here at the Commission align with this Council's mission. Ensuring equity and the provision of and access to digital communication services is vital. It should happen throughout the ecosystem. The workforce creating and deploying technologies should be as diverse as well as the people of this great nation. Those technologies, once deployed, should be available and accessible, but it's not easy. And that's why the CEDC is so important. Your expertise, your unique background and insights make the recommendations we will hear even stronger. For the past several years, the CEDC has led the charge to diversify the tech and telecom workforce. Your recent Digital Ecosystem Forum touched on a number of important issues that must be addressed in order for us to make any real headway. I heard similar thoughts when I recently visited the Virginia State University with Commissioner Carr to learn about VSU's efforts to train the workforce of the future. Relatedly, I have worked hard to ensure that we have diversity here at the FCC. And so that's why, in coordination with my former colleague, Ajit Pai, I created the FCC's Early Career Diversity Initiative, an initiative that offers paid internships at the FCC year-round to ensure that the inability to work without pay doesn't hold great students back. And so I'm proud to say that I've had an early career staff diversity intern every semester and summer since the program began in 2020. They have been fantastic, and I look forward to supporting their careers. In closing, I want to thank you again for serving on the CEDC, for your dedication to improving diversity and equity. I'm heartened that it has been rechartered, and I'm excited to read your reports. Thank you all, and be safe and be well.
Now we will hear from Commissioner Nathan Symington.
This is my second time participating in the Communications Equity and Diversity Council, and I once again thank Commission staff and other members of the CEDC for participating in this vital work. Among the topics touched on today will be access to capital and diverse ownership in media, communications, and technology. And I'm particularly interested in these topics. Support for diversity, equity, and inclusion in industry is, or at least can be sometimes, rather brittle. The reality is that these efforts are sometimes thought of as just a compliance exercise or public relations maneuver, a corporate cost rather than an economic opportunity. And when times get tough and belts tighten, as they always do at some companies, even in good times, the so-called inessential can wind up being shed to survive. But that's the wrong way to look at it. Diverse ownership, especially in media, is not a mere policy goal. It actually forms the foundation of a social interface. It's a way for people to be represented and voices to be heard, but also a conduit to greater social understanding and participation. And that couldn't be more critical than it is now. Access to capital is a primary driver of our dismal diverse ownership rates in media. Access to capital, in turn, relies on the defensibility of an investable thesis. Incidentally, a bit of an aside, it might also be helped by the Commission's explicit clarification that a security interest in the proceeds of an asset sale attendant to the transfer of a license, as opposed to a security interest in the license itself, is legal. Anyway, are media companies worth investing in? Well, who knows? The big AVOD and SVOD streamers, with their comparatively lighter investment in physical plant and nominally high gross margins, ought to be killing it. But they're not. They've paid through the nose in development and acquisition of IP, and they're locked in a Red Queen's race with one another. Traditional MVPDs and broadcast? Well, the MVPDs have a good ISP business, for now, but I wouldn't say that the media side of the house is without hurdles, with much of the value in the network and video being pulled out to the networks. VMVPDs haven't cracked the code either, for the same reasons, even though they're more asset-light. Broadcast? Well, broadcast has been a hard business for a while, and it keeps getting harder. If you have two options for directing your energy and resources, one, a high-margin, high-multiple technology company, and the other, a single-digit growth or even flatlining media company in secular decline, trading at a low multiple, where would you put your money? Where would you recommend that your child apply for a job? And in a tough economic environment, which investment might open up access to the kind of debt facility that you would need to make the investment as a new entrant? I think the answer there is relatively clear. So what role does the Commission have in this? Well, we have some programs that we run, and that's great, but our much larger lever is the overall shape of our media regulation. When we burden legacy media with regulation, we lower the asset value of legacy media. And when we do that, we put up a barrier to access to capital. And because nearly all ownership in legacy media is non-minority, almost all capital investment from the minority community into legacy media will be fresh and will therefore depend, at least to some degree, on access to financing. The way, therefore, to improve diverse ownership of legacy media, if it can be improved, is to lighten the regulatory burden on legacy media and try, to the extent possible, to make it a more attractive class of assets for new entrants. More rules meant to incentivize or require diverse ownership without improving the overall investability of legacy media as a class will have precisely the opposite of the intended effect, as talented people who might otherwise flood into the industry are held back by high entrance costs and simply put their money and talent elsewhere. I look forward to hearing CEDC's ideas on these topics, and thank you very much for the invitation to speak.
Finally, we will hear from FCC Chairwoman Jessica Rosenworcel. Due to technical difficulties in the live-streamed meeting, some portions of Chair Rosenworcel's statements have been cut off. We will play her remarks as they were received here in Riverton. Again, please mind the bumps.
Good morning. Good morning. Oh my gosh, it's terrific to see you all here. And times at all these meetings, all these workshops. But today's gathering is special, which is totally appropriate, because this is like your graduation. You're meeting from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. today, so that is probably a record of some sorts. If you're looking for a little inspiration, looking for someone to try to explain to you how they see the world, I'm just going to submit to you there's no better thing than tracking some down. And it's a speech that Steve Jobs gave at Stanford University. And one thing that's really notable about this legendary speech, he worked on it and called Aaron Sorkin for input. By the way, that's not a privilege I have, but it's simple. He ended his speech with what might be the most tired graduation cliche of all: follow your heart. So apparently you can give trite advice when you're the greatest innovator of your generation, and lots of people clap. But again, he also overcame dropping out of college, getting fired from the company. I share this with you for two reasons. The first is, by being part of this group, you've actually lived this cliche. That, and I appreciate it. Because if you think about it, every single person who is sitting on this committee has achieved some pretty hot success in their professional lives. We invited you here because you're among the best in the tech and telecom sector. And if you think I'm exaggerating, just take note, the previous leader of... I got a lot of committees. You can't say that about any other one. So this means your time is valuable. It's also limited. And we have paid you in nothing this group is doing. You believe, in some words I really like from the late Senator Paul Wellstone, we all do better when we all do better. All right, so that brings me to my second point. When people, and especially young people, venture out into the world, we always tell them, you should go follow your hearts, just like Steve Jobs did that day. Follow your passion. Now, implicit in that message are a few things, but it's really the idea that if you work hard, persevere, play by the rules, that is just the path to happiness and success. See, there's a catch. That path is not the same for everyone. Where some find open doors, others are going to be met with obstacles. Because let's face it, no matter who you are and what your aspirations are, it's not always easy out there. But it's even harder if you don't have the same access to capital as others who are trying to start a business. It's even harder to believe you can do great things. Have the same access to broadband because you just don't live in the right zip code. That's why the CEDC exists, to help us level the playing field, to make sure that following your heart isn't a false promise if you don't fit in the right demographic profile. And as the first woman to lead this agency, confirmed to do so after 87 years, believe me, I know something about not fitting the demographic profile. You've done some remarkable work, but you've done work to help reduce barriers and promote equal opportunity. You've expanded this committee's historic focus, not just on the, from just being on the media ecosystem to the broader technology sector. I think that's really important. You've also played an indispensable role in the Commission's efforts to adopt rules to crack down on digital discrimination, because the bipartisan infrastructure law tasked this commission with a really important task: to develop rules and policies to prevent that kind of discrimination and redlining, and to set up model codes that we can share across this country and globally to help do so. And you've been a formidable part of that. You've also helped to set up some workshops for actionable advice on securing access to capital, updating skill set, and what the evolving technology marketplace means for job candidates. You've helped create mentoring opportunities. That's a lot. And please, again, I recognize that we have paid you just with our gratitude. So we are grateful for your time and your service. I also am grateful to the FCC staff who have helped shepherd this initiative. They're really tremendous. And they too get paid a lot of times just in gratitude. All right, so let me thank them, Jamila Jabest Johnson, Ashley Tyson, and Diana Coho. But I also really want to thank the people I started with, and that includes Chair Heather Gate, the fiery Nicole Turner Lee, and Susan Allen. It's been terrific to have you working at the helm of this organization. And I'm proud of Anderson and Christopher Wood. So at this point, I feel like I need pomp and circumstance because I said this was a graduation, right? But you don't want me humming or singing. Trust me on that. Plus, you have 7 hours of work ahead of you. So we're going to crank a little more out before we call this a day. But let me say thank you again. Our work here isn't done. You know that, and I know that. But you've gotten some big things started. And we are absolutely going to be rechartering this council, and I hope many of you will come back for another 2 years of service, and of course, our undying gratitude.
You've been listening to the remarks made by all four members of the Federal Communications Commission during the June 15, 2023 meeting of the FCC's Communications Equity and Diversity Council.
FCC Today.
FCC Today, the podcast, has been a production of REC Networks, always on at recnet.com. The podcast is available through Podbean, TuneIn, Apple Podcasts, iHeart, and on the Michelle Bradley YouTube channel. If you're watching on YouTube, please like the video, subscribe to the channel, and hit the notification dinger to be informed of new episodes. Keep up to the minute with events around the Media Bureau at fcc.today. If you need assistance with an FM broadcast facility, LPFM, full service, or translator, call 202-621-2355. I'm Michelle Bradley, SBE Certified Broadcast Technologist. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here on Tuesday. REC.